Good evening and welcome. My name is Lyle Williams. I'm the curator of prints and drawings here at the McNay and the curator of Estampas de la Raza, the show upstairs. And I have the honor and privilege to introduce our moderator this evening, Dr. Ricardo Romo. But before I do that, I have a little bit of thanks I need to give out, and that is to our two guest speakers this evening, George Vargas and Carlos Francisco Jackson. A friend of mine, very dear friend of mine years ago, always told me that with a great library and an afternoon, you could become the second best expert on any topic. And of course, it was a little hyperbole, but it's something I always took to heart, and I always think it's important to thank your teachers, whether they teach you in print or they teach you in a classroom setting. So my thanks to both George Vargas and Carlos Francisco Jackson. I'm delighted that they're here. Thank you. And of course, our moderator has also been a great teacher of mine in person instead of in print. I've told this anecdote before. A reporter called from Austin and asked me, you know, they were interviewing me for an article, and they said, so have you guided the Romos in their collecting? And I've laughed just like that, and I said, no, I've been the one who's been guided. They have been my teachers. So I'm also honored and delighted that Ricardo is here. A fellow Longhorn graduate, a fellow UT graduate, and also a PhD in history from the University of California, Los Angeles, a published author, and as we all know, the president of the University of Texas, San Antonio, and as we all also know, because of the exhibition and their incredible generosity, an incredibly passionate collector of art, and a very, very generous friend to the McNay. Again, please welcome me. Please join me in welcoming all three of our speakers for this evening.
Well, thank you, Lyle, and good evening. And before I get going, I just do want to thank the McNay for a tremendous opportunity that they've offered us to bring this art to this community. And the most important thing for us was that the art gets to the community. We joke about the fact that the art was under our beds and in our closets, and it needed to get out and be shown to the community. And the McNay's done a great job, and I understand now that the show will travel to Albuquerque, New Mexico. We're very happy about that. If you don't know too much about us, in fact, I want to introduce the co-conspirator in our collection is the other doctor, Dr. Harriet Romo. So I want to thank the McNay and Bill Chiago and Lyle have been terrific on this. Well, we're going to get rolling because there's a lot of topic. We could be here quite a few hours on this conversation. So I would like to this question was organized here from the McNay side. They've been doing some great educational programs. They had 1,600 or almost 1,600 people here for Family Day on a Sunday, which, by the way, I'm told, and we're just so proud that it broke all attendance records. It beat Andy Warhol and the Impressionist shows. So we said, wow. So I think it's all because of you and your friends and your neighbors who decided, you know, Latino art does matter, and we're going to come and see it and appreciate it, enjoy it, and share it, and the moments here which many of you will connect with. So I think out of that conversation with young people and having the educational programs, many times a question came up, well, why did they, you know, where's this term Chicano art, where's the term Chicano come from? Where's this term Chicano art come from? And we just, you know, the decision was, well, we better start explaining what we mean by Chicano and then connect it to, of course, Chicano art. So my question is going to be, because it is connected to the show, is to these individuals to begin with some kind of connection with they have with Chicano. And I will tell you, honestly, I grew up in San Antonio, Texas. I had no connection with the word Chicano at all in the 60s until I went to East L.A. to teach high school. And there, a lot of individuals, young people. It's kind of funny is that back then, it was a very generational term. The young people used it, the older people did not. So now the older people use it sometimes. I don't know if the younger people use it. But we're going to find out from these experts. Let me introduce our experts. Carlos Jackson, I want you all to know, if you, he is an artist. He has the piece there that where Cesar Chavez is meeting up with Robert Kennedy. He also has a piece on dealing with the braceros being shipped back to Mexico in the 1940s. So he has two really fine pieces in the show. He's from California. He was born in East L.A. He went to University of California, Davis. He got a BA degree in community work, but an MFA in painting. And I didn't know about the taller, but he's the director of the taller Arte de Nuevo Amanecer, which is based in Woodland, California, right there in Los Angeles area. He's published a history of the Chicano art movement, which I happen to be a reviewer of that particular work. He is really a very fine artist. Unusual to have someone of his talent as an artist be an essayist and a writer. But his book on Chicano art, which is called Chicana and Chicano Art, Protest Arte. So no wonder we were asking this question. What does Chicano mean? So you're gonna start off in a minute, but let me also introduce George Vargas, born in Carrizo Springs, grew up in Michigan picking the crops. And he has 3 degrees from the University of Michigan, a BFA, MA, and PhD in art history. He's also a publisher. He's published published Contemporary Chicana Art, Color and Culture for a New America, UT Press. He's currently an associate professor of art history at locally, not too far from here, Texas A&M Kingsville. We share something in common. We're both Ford Fellows, and we're both recipients of the Cesar Chavez, Martin Luther King, and Rosa Parks Awards at the University of Michigan. So, all right.
Thank you.
Okay. So let's start with Carlos Jackson, and I don't know how you want to start in terms of defining the term or defining how it connects to art.
Okay. thank you for having me, the McNay, the Romos, Chris Davila, for hosting. This is an incredible space here, and the museum itself hosting the show, and the way it's hung, the way that it's situated right next to Vincent Valdez's work, I think, showing a contemporary artist working here in San Antonio, who's really a giant amongst a younger generation of artists who, you know, want to be, create culture and create it in a way that has meaning to our experience and speaks about the world in which we're seeing. And which requires kind of straddling, two worlds, which is, I think, the heart of a lot of what Chicana-Chicano experience is about. The question today is important, I think, and Chris said this would be a discussion, and it's such a difficult kind of place to start. But for me, I guess it starts with I'm a professor, a faculty member, assistant professor of Chicano Studies at UC Davis. And when I was starting, after I finished graduate school, I did a post-graduate residency in Provincetown, Massachusetts for a year, and then I was living with my partner, now wife, in Vermont before I moved back to California. And I made a conscious decision to seek employment in a Chicana-Chicano Studies department as an artist, not as a scholar or somebody who studies Chicana-Chicano art and then writes and critiques it, but as somebody who seeks to continue to create it and promote it and to say that it's still alive. It's something that, that it's not post. It's we're still in the middle of it. I've been blessed to have a mentor, friend, and colleague, Malaquias Montoya, friend of the Romos, kind of a giant in the formation of Chicano printmaking. who's in the show as well. And I've been working with him for, we co-direct this taller that we run in Woodland. And he started in Chicano Studies at UC Davis a series of community-based art courses that are taught not in an art department, but they're actually taught in Chicano Studies. The poster workshop, the mural workshop, which we still continue to teach there today. So when I teach a class on Chicano Studies, in Chicano Studies, like this quarter I'm teaching a survey of Chicano art, and I start with, I start with my class and I say, what is this term Chicano mean? And I get a piece of chalk and my chalkboard, and I just start, I say, you know, not what you think it's supposed to mean, or not what you're trying to find the right answer as to what it means, but like, what have you grown up hearing that it means? And the class, that class gets rowdy that first day, because, you know, I say, you know, unfiltered, just tell me honestly what you understand it to mean, you know, what you heard. And I write on the board, and you should see the board at the end of the day. It's wild, all the different things that people say. It's a political Mexican-American, yes. It's a pocho, it's a sellout, you know, somebody who lost their culture, somebody who doesn't speak Spanish, you know, because it means that you're not fully Mexicano anymore. It means that you're more assimilated. Whereas, you know, a lot of people would assume that the term Chicano, like, identifies somebody who's, like, has, you know, a complete expression of their culture, you know, that they've, like, retained their language, that they're anti-assimilationist. So then the rest of the quarter in that class is about narrowing down, you know, filtering out those things that are like innuendos or stereotypes and trying to filter it down. And for me personally, you know, if Chicano, you know, oftentimes the most predominant way that people understand, from my perspective, what the term Chicano is, it's another term to identify a Mexican American. That's like the most direct, obvious way that people have replicated that notion. And that, yes, it has a kind of political, social, cultural connotation, but that it most directly is a reference to like a race-based identity, you could say. And for me, you know, if Chicano Studies was just Mexican American studies, I don't know that I would have, you know, dedicated my life, my career to it, because it's just simply being defined by race somehow isn't enough to me. I guess it all depends on where you start with this question, what your starting place is. And for me, my starting place is, was like the foundational document the first foundational document that formed the curriculum in Chicano Studies, which was a Plan de Santa Bárbara, which was a document that was just a bunch of 22, 23-year-olds, 25, 26-year-olds who, during the beginning of the Chicano movement, united in Santa Barbara and came together and wrote a curriculum for what Chicano Studies would look like at universities, at community colleges, in the high schools. And in that document, it says, culturally, the word Chicano in the past, a pejorative and class-bound adjective, meaning it was used within our own community in the past to, like, denigrate those who were poor, dark-skinned, the worker. In the past, the pejorative and class-bound adjective has now become the root idea for a new cultural identity for our people. And And that idea, then the question becomes, well, what's the idea behind it? If it's a root idea for a new consciousness. And if you read on, and depending on what you read, my reading is that the root idea of that new consciousness was community self-determination. That, you know, you don't necessarily leave the community, you know, at the expense of those, that from which you come. But you use your treasure, your resources, your effort, your time in order to build community, in order to hand in hand uplift the community. And that essentially was what that root idea was about. And in that sense, it moves beyond just you're Mexican American, so you're included. You know, you're not Mexican American, so you're not included. And for me, that makes a lot of sense to me. There's a lot of truth in that to me because I have the last name Jackson. You know, my Spanish is really pretty poor. You know, by a lot of the determinants of like who's a Chicano, who's not. You know, that oftentimes this insider-outsider thing, I would not fall within that. You know. Yet it burns inside of me. I just know that that's how my life has meaning. That's where I start. That it's this way of thinking. It's this idea of how to engage our life. And that's actually what I teach my class. And the class is like, I know you're going to be doctors, if you want to be a vet or a biologist, or you want to be a community advocate, an educator, you want to teach in the schools, you want to be a lawyer, you want to be a politician, whatever it is, there's a way that the strategies that emerge from that idea can have an application in your life. And yet, you know, that a lot of times then there's a lot of questions that come from that does that mean that, you know, if you're this, you know, there's all these questions that emerge from my students, and some of them I can answer, and a lot of time I have a hard time answering, because with that open-endedness kind of allows for a lot of ambiguity, and those are things we try and work out, I guess.
Well, thank you. We're going to go on to George in a second, but we had a conversation with some other folks here the first time around a couple of months ago, and someone said, well, why do you use the term Chicano? What's going on here? And of course, then someone else jumped in and said, you know, I was taught, this is not a good term. You know, you shouldn't be calling yourself a Chicano. You shouldn't be using that term. And I said, look, it's not about you. It's about these guys. And these guys are the artists. And if they paint, and then they say, this is what Chicano art is, then we have to respect it. And say, you know, it's not for us to say, you know, this is the label that we're going to give to you, and you should use this label. So I think what Carlos is saying here, he's obviously given it some thought. He's given it some bounce back and forth with the students, which is really exciting. Okay, Professor George Vargas.
Thank you. Contextualized within world art, Chicano art is another expression, a genre, a movement. Contextualized within American art, Chicano art can be seen as protest art, social commentary art, as well as personal art. And that's what we have to remember, that Chicano art is many things to many people because it has grown to that particular dimension. The idea that we identify art is not new. It's an old process by which we identify, classify, and analyze art expression and genre or movement. This began with prehistoric art. In fact, there's a big discussion right now as regards to the identity and gender of cave artists. We've now discovered that unlike traditional history, where we believe that the men, the hunters, were the primary artists, we're finding out that there were women artists as well as young girls creating the artwork on the cave walls, because it's dominated by the feminine perspective, the feminine divine. So why wouldn't women and girls be engaged in making this art? So that idea of identity and gender begins as early as so-called Paleolithic art, and it continues. We can talk about French Impressionism. We can talk about Greek Hellenistic, and there seems to be no problem in world art to identify and classify art this way. However, when we come to U.S. Society, there seems to be a problem because there's a misidentification regarding the identity of Mexican Americans, Mexicans, Latinos, Hispanics, or Chicanos, if you will.
Or Indians.
Or Native Americans, thank you, of which Chicanos are a part of. We're mestizos, right? the racial ethnic trunk of the Americas is mestizo, that is, a mixture, a racial ethnic mixture of Indian as well as European / Spanish and African. And to one extent or another, this mestizaje, this mixed culture, is right now what is the dominant culture in all the Americas. The primary language in the Americas is not English, but Spanish. So at this particular unique time, it is very precious that we take advantage of the situation by which to self-identify and self-determine our destiny, that is, our fate. We had a zeitgeist moment in this presidential election, and that, again, revealed the face of America, the real America, women and people of color, gays, and so forth and so forth. So again, all those different sections of society also will be taking advantage of this unique opportunity by which to, again, self-identify and determine their own fate. Unfortunately, we've left it to others who have dominated our culture, our language, our education, our employment, to determine, to shape, to dictate our own destiny. And that we cannot tolerate anymore. We are the dominant population group, as many of you know, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. I used to work for the Census, and I have seen the change in the labels that are imposed upon Spanish-speaking people. We begin with that particular term, Spanish-speaking. We go to Spanish. We go to Latin. We go to Latino. We go to Latin American, Mexican, Mexican-American, Chicano, and so forth. The most popular term right now, ladies and gentlemen, is Hispanic. That's a government-sanctioned label that really began in usage with President Richard Nixon and Dr. Kissinger, who wanted to put a label on this, you know, this new voting bloc, number one. And number two, they wanted to make sure that they had identified Latinos and Latin America because of the great rise of revolution in Cuba, Latin America, and so forth. So it was more than just a way by which to identify, through the census, this rising population of Mexican-American. It was a way by which to politically label and thus control or manipulate we people here, we Americans. There was a fantastic, articulate, intelligent journalist, Ruben Salazar, who came from this town here, San Antonio, we're proud to say, Era Tejano. Eventually, he covered the Chicano moratorium in 1970, and he was at the Silver Dollar Cafe or Saloon with some other radicals. The military and the police surrounded that particular cafe because they'd heard that there were armed or militant Chicanos there. Far from that. They fired tear gas canisters, and one of those hit the journalist Salazar in the head, of course, killing him. There was an investigation. They promised to open up all the boxes of evidence several years ago, but they're still holding back critical evidence showing that the police were at fault. He had a very speedy reply to the question which he'd always receive, what is Chicano? And he would answer, a Chicano has a non-Anglo view of himself. And as we have now seen, it is the Anglo or the white racist society which has dictated our fate. Luckily, as I've said, there's a nexus on the road where we now have a choice. As Yogi Berra said, if you come to a fork in the road, take it. So I want to reiterate what Carlos has said. This term is associated since the 1960s and even before then, in World War II, American GIs, Mexicano, Chicano, challenged the system. They wanted recognition. They wanted to be identified, and they did. Dr. Garcia, for example, Corpus Christi, did a marvelous job in identifying Mexican-Americans and their special needs because they were being ignored, that is, employment and education. And this is really what we're talking about, determining our education and our career. So again, that label has been used as a way to manipulate the masses. The label was very, very current and popular during the 60s because it was tagged onto the so-called People's Art Movement that consisted of African-American, blacks, Native American women, Asian Pacific American, Chicano, and so forth and so forth, marching hand in hand for civil rights. And surely we have gained much progress in civil rights, but there's much more work to be done. Art is a way by which we have strategized our survival. The artist, the poet, the writer, the filmmaker, they're part of the community. And not only they speak to the community, but they're speaking beyond. I've organized with Chich Marina's show in Madrid, Spain, Pintores de Aztlán. Who would have thought that the Spaniards would be enamored with Chicano art? They are indeed. They're very curious about this, and they're very hungry to learn about what Chicano is, this phenomena. Why? Because they see us as bastard children. That, you know, they have, that we're part of their heritage, and they're looking somehow to see themselves reflected in our own destiny, our own fate, and they're begging us to bring shows there and to lecture and to write and make art because, again, they see a mirror. The Magnet should be congratulated as a number of, a handful of museums throughout the nation now are looking at Chicano art and African-American art, women's art, for various reasons. Maybe they want to contribute to social change. Or maybe they're concerned about art as big business.
Okay. Lots of...
All right, lots of ideas here. Where do we start? I want to just mention something. I got to meet Rubén Salazar, and I was in East LA. We were in East LA from 67 to 75, and working in East LA, and then I went on to University of San Diego. Where they had the Centro Cultural de la Raza. And the Centro Cultural de la Raza was, in contrast to some of the other centers, were like Chicano studies or something else, but they encompassed la raza. So Rubén Salazar, the last lithograph done by David Siqueiros was a tribute to Rubén Salazar, who had been killed in L.A., and I'm happy to say that, by good fortune, we bought that print and we gave it to the Magnet. So the Magnet has the print of Siqueiros of Rubén Salazar, so one of the heroes, and it's a real tribute to a Mexican connecting with a Chicano. Okay, so let's get to some issues like we mentioned some generation factors. Now there are parts of the country in the Southwest where Mexican American is a common term, Latino is a common term, Hispanic is a common term. Is it your sense that you travel around these states, so just the Southwest, we're not going to Chicago yet, or New York, is it your sense that the term Chicano is more prevalent, more used in certain communities? It's an easy question for Jackson, but what is your sense? Is it still used a lot? Is it used just among the artists? Or is it used by the young people? Or what group?
I find that it's used all over the place, haphazardly. You know, I often find it used more in a positive way, like in the schools, you know, Chicano clubs in the high schools, you know, people who want to be political in some way. They want to find meaning in their experience. They want to do something, You know, they want to find a way to contribute in some way. They're looking around and they're seeing, you know, the poverty around them, or they're seeing, you know, they're feeling racism in some way, but can't like place their, you know, they can't like, they feel it, but they can't, you know, pinpoint it exactly. And there's that impetus, that drive to just do something, you know. And I see it a lot there. I see it. My uncle, who's a Vietnam vet, I come from a big Chicano family, like, you know, over 40 first cousins. And I remember when I came home from college, or like right after my first quarter, and I was like, had this awakening, you know. I took an introduction to Chicano studies course, and like my world started coming together in a way. And I came home for Christmas, and I remember talking to my uncle, who went through he was a Vietnam vet, came back you know, quite damaged from the war, addicted to drugs for some time, got caught up in the penal system. And but I come back and I'm talking to him about what I'm learning about this term Chicano, about Chicano studies. And he says to me, yeah, you didn't, like, he started telling me about how he had learned about it when he was in prison, you know, in 1971. And talking about Aslan, we started talking about Aslan and this term Chicano and being political. And I don't know. Honestly, I think it's alive. I know it's alive. You know, I know it's not post. You know, I know we haven't moved beyond the term. I know that it has a lot of validity for a lot of people. There's an older, like my parents, who are like, oh, they just want me to like get a good. They, you know, initially, like when I was a student and getting real active in things, they had, like, they just wanted me to graduate and get a job, you know, because like no one had, like, you know, no one had really gone to college, you know, at that point. They're like, you know, that, and that's a lot of Chicano studies students. A lot of Chicano students, that's what their families hope for them, you know, is like, go to college to get a job, to support yourself, give back to your family. Then we go to college and we start, you know.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And
changing.
And, you know, so I, you know, in my classes, I go back to there a lot, because I see that, like, when you talk to people, you talk to a group of people about it, spend time discussing it, it's just, the more and more it becomes like it's alive, mm-hmm. You know. And so it's this question is, it's still very open, because a lot of different people are using it in a lot of different ways. As my class kind of says on the first day, you know, and you probably experienced that in your communities, amongst your families. You know, it's like, if your family got together and sat around a table and talked about all the different perspectives of what you thought this word meant, it'd be all over the place. Mm. And so the artists, though, I mean, there's a practicing group of young artists who really are trying to, like, make work that honors that idea, you know, community self-determination, equality, anti-racism, social justice. There's artists that are trying to use their visual skills to further that movement. And you know, and so in that sense, yes, it's alive. It's used widely, just very, very differently in very, very different places. You know, some that I would agree with, and some that, you know, you can't take away somebody's, the way they use it. You know, that's how they use it. And you can't say, no, you're wrong. You know, that's not right. Which is, you know, somebody says, well, doesn't it, you know, it's like, well, this is what it means to me. You know, this is my perspective. This is my reading mm-hmm. of it, you know.
George, along the same question, but also asking from, when you see this exhibit and others, but this one, since it has 41 different artists, there's 61 pieces and about 40 different artists. And you come up to a Malaquias Montoya, well, that's easy. He's a Chicano. And you may come up to the Pachuco, the Zoot Suiter, and Gomez. But I say, yeah, he's probably a Chicano, I don't know. You know. Frank Romero, and maybe so. Is there a sense there that there's a lot of variety,
or do you sense that the majority are calling themselves Chicano artists?
Well, we're looking at two parts of the expression or the aesthetic, if you will. Generally speaking, there's the so-called social commentary, what may be called protest art, if you'd like, or social realism. That has a long tradition that begins maybe with, the Renaissance and goes to the French school of realism and so forth. Then there's the other part of that that connects to the Mexican school of social realism, the Mexican modernist school. And that particular school still suffers from a lot of negative fallout because los tres grandes, the big three, that is Rivera, Orozco, Siqueiros, were quite successful in Mexico creating murals and even making prints. These two were the most popular vehicles of mass communication in Mexico. The Chicano artists in the early 60s looked to Mexico for inspiration and found those two vehicles suited the Chicano art movement, the early Chicano art movement. So this is where we really begin with this idea of the contemporary Chicano expression in the 1960s. And sad to say, many art authorities are still stuck in that particular decade believing that all Chicano art is militant and radical. In other words, storm the Bastille and destroy the Mona Lisa and so forth and so forth. And that's far from it. I don't know any Chicano artists of the 60s practicing at that time that were doing that. I was familiar with Gonzafo's artists from San Antonio. I was familiar with Asco from Los Angeles, a number of other art groups in the 60s and 70s. We were all working together to move society forward and create social change in our community and as well the community at large that is trying to impact positive change in the mainstream of art. So Chicano is still quite popular, especially among the veteranos, so to speak. ASCO members, they're individual artists, and they're very prolific and well-known. In fact, they're international artists. The two, Gronk, for example, the most famous of those four, is represented upstairs, and there's a little bit of a statement regarding his own perspective on what Chicano art is. We commissioned Gronk at UTEP El Paso, and he came in, and he made an installation painting, one of his first installation paintings in Texas, in fact, his first one. He informed us that he has roots in Texas, so we were very close to that kind of expression that had very little due to Chicano iconography, that is, the Aztecs and the pyramids and so forth. Chaz Bojorquez just recently replied to my question, is what is a Chicano artist and is Chicano art alive or dead? Far from it. He replied, Chicano art is alive in capital letters, exclamation mark. He was very concerned about one show coming out of Califas, that is California, that begged the issue, that brought forth the problem regarding this mistaken identity of Chicano. Phantom Sightings, an exhibition organized, co-curated with Chon Noriega out of UCLA, organized it, but they had a hard time deciding what to call it. Unfortunately, they mislabeled it, so to speak, because they somehow connected Chicano, contemporary Chicano expression with the Chicano political movement. Not all Chicano art is political or protest, number one. So consequently, there was, again, this fallout. This just happened several years ago, where especially the younger artists were very upset that they were categorized as militant or radical or protest art when they were doing maybe minimalism or installation art or something like that. So this is a very, very topical issue, this idea of what is this label, Chicano.
I'd like to...
Sure, please.
Yeah, you know, George talked about the last election, which was... you know, for Chicanos, and Chris Davila and George and I talked about this a little earlier, that for the Chicano community or for Mexican Americans or Latinos in the United States, we've always known that this is a diverse country. We've always known, you know, that Texas previously was part of Mexico, you know, the Alamos here, you know, it's a lot of history. L.A., growing up in Boyle Heights, East L.A., the east side of L.A., and yet, you know, the dominant culture, the structure, you could say, wasn't almost, we were just a fringe, right? And this last election was really quite exciting because all of a sudden, you know, people woke up and said, we have to pay attention to the women vote. You know, like, it's somewhat problematic if they're still talking about legitimate rape mm-hmm. or women having the ability to access contraception through their, you know, employer's health insurance. Like, that upset them, you know, and they're 54% of the voting population, and the growth in the Chicano Latino population, and the way it's, you know, it was a landslide. You know, it was like, President Obama won 76% of the Latino vote, and 98% of the Black vote, mm-hmm. and won 70-some% of the single women vote, but then Romney won like 80% of the Republican white male vote, you know, mm-hmm. and it was this clash happening, you know. And one of the things in Chicano studies that is often said about Chicanos is that we're like trying to overthrow, you know, remake Aztlan, remake the seven southwestern states into Mexico. And, you know, we're immigrating here to, like, you know, do this, to take over, take back our land and crazy stuff. There's websites dedicated to this, you know, these ideas, these conspiracy theories. When, in fact, you know, Chicanos are just seeking to be full participants in society, right, to have a full voice and, like, have ability to have self-determination. And the question with the election is, you know, as the country continues to change, in California, California now, Democrats have, like, a supermajority in the state legislature now. That's large part to the diversity in California and the growing population of Chicanos and Latinos in California. By 2030, the Chicano Latino population in California is going to be the majority. And that's going to be here quite quickly. And the question is, when, you know, it's when the change in society happens, is it just the same structure, but you just have different colored people running it? You know, or is there actually something structurally that can be changed in order to demand that there's greater access to education, right? There's a better, greater, more well-funded public education, that it's not Black and brown people that are so overrepresented in the prison industrial complex and so underrepresented in higher education. Like, are things going to continue, but the leadership is just going to be more diverse, you know, and nothing ever really changes? And I think that goes to the heart of my idea about this question, which is, if the term Chicano means that it's just, you know, you're just a Mexican American, then to me it's a redundancy. You know, it just says, you know, you're included because what you do and how you do it, you know, you happen to be in this particular racial or, you know, cultural category. Whereas if it's a strategy, if it's like an approach, if it's a way of engagement, then it has meaning. It means that there's ideas about what we're doing or how you're working to change things, in a sense, how you're working to create greater equality or social justice or greater representation for people who previously had historically been discriminated against. And it's about change. It's about fundamentally changing something. It's not just about greater diversity for diversity's sake, you know. It's about that when there's greater diversity, there's also going to be a greater awareness of why it was important and why it was essential and why the past, the structure that existed, was unjust, why those injustices occurred, and to ensure that they're not replicated. To me, that's what it's about. You know, it's about ensuring that in the future, as you know, in Texas, you're talking about secession. you know?
Un-American.
I mean, that's, anyways, the news out of, you know, in California about Texas is, you know, there's, you're waving the flag over here, you know, and after this election. But the thing is, you know, neither the Democrats or Republicans really campaigned either in Texas or in California. And the question is as the Chicano Latino population in Texas continues to grow, Texas is going to become a swing state by 2020. But they even think maybe by 2016, you know, it'll start to, some things will be in play. By 2020 and by 2030, for sure, things are going to change here, the population. Is it just going to be, you know, the same thing, just different leadership, you know? Or is there structurally something going to be different about the world in which we're going to create? And to me, that's what interests me about Chicano studies, about Chicano art, you know? It's about representing an image, you know, making the invisible visible, you know? And there's still incredible inequality in this country. The Great Recession, depression that happened over the last 4 years affected the black and brown communities overwhelmingly in proportion to the population. You know, there's still incredible difficulty that the communities of color are facing, even though, you know, more people are getting educated. There's people like me teaching. There's administrators, you know. It's like there's still a lot of work to do. And that's really what it's about. It's not just that we're there. It's what we're doing with that opportunity once we're there.
It's interesting, and just hearing you, and one of the things consistent with what the origins, back in the 60s when you started to have a broader movement, people did call themselves Chicanos in scattered communities, but you have a broader movement, you could be sure that if you brought up and talked about Chicanos, you're going to talk about politics. So Carlos, you just proved that. They're going to be. There's going to be a political
like, no,
talk.
No.
Honestly, you would. This is what we needed to hear because the thing that pushed the art was the fact that you had a Cesar Chavez who was introducing Teatro Campesino. And they were criticized. The things that you talked about, injustice, you know, the fair laws and everything else, they brought all those themes into the theater. Well, then from that comes Zoot Suit. And so you've seen, hopefully upstairs, there is this great poster to the Pachuco in Zoot Suit. Sort of like this early rebels, the Pachucos. And then you have the music. I know very little about Latino music. But there was so much of it, and this gentleman here told me, you know, he has a card there from Los Lobos, East Los Angeles. Well, I was president of the board, the Centro Cultural de la Raza, in San Diego Balboa Park, and we commissioned Los Lobos for $125 to come play a fundraiser. Yeah, unheard of. This is like 1973, okay? But I think all these things kind of coming together at that time. I'd be remiss if I didn't tell you what we thought the origins of the word Chicano were. So some of the thought was this. In Nahuatl, the X is pronounced like chi. So the Spanish would say Mexicano. The Indian, Nahuatl, would say Mexicano. So where is Mexicano? Mexicano is un Chicano. And so that the thought was that maybe the corruption of the word Mexicano impacted in how people, you know, came up with the word. Now it's not in too much literature. There are songs and corridos back in the 20s and 30s that use the word Chicano. And the term Chicano and I'm a historian and I saw a lot of corridos and the music of the corridos. And the term was often used as somebody who was poor, sort of a maybe a bracero. Es un Chicano would be like, he's just es trabajador, hombre que trabaja con las manos. Okay, well, George, you get...
shot at trying to also discuss maybe the coming together, because you're into art, and so it's music. You mentioned ASCO. We got theater. All of these forces coming together. Does it impact what people paint, and what people think, and what people write?
Of course, art is about ideas, and that's why art is very dangerous. All art is political. Even apolitical art is political. Greek art is political. Roman art is political. Much of American art is propaganda art, therefore political. I'd like to get back to the label of Chicano and bring up another identifier, as we call it in the U.S. Census, that is la raza. Originally, raza, the word raza, meant a Spanish person, a Spaniard, and or a European Christian. That has greatly changed when the Spanish came over to colonize. They brought that word with them to identify themselves. Mexicanos, Indians heard that. Chicanos heard that. And now we use it to identify both Mexicano and Chicano and other Latinos that want to be part of familia, family. And it's more inclusive than Mexican-American. But it still begs the issue, what's an American? And Chicano underscores this idea that a Chicano is an American of Mexican descent, if nothing else. And thus we're talking about cultural identification, not political identification, because there is no Chicano political movement at this particular time. It's dead. The only movement that exists right now is the Chicano art movement. Although it's not formal, there are still groups that practice certain ideas of social protest or caricature or a satire or whatever it may be, graffiti art and so forth. I believe that the Chicano, the Latino, the Hispanic peoples themselves are in what's called a conceptual basin by inventors. The pogo stick was stuck in a conceptual basin. Now there are three or four contemporary pogo sticks by which you can jump 20 feet, extreme pogo stick competition, and so forth. The telephone was stuck in a conceptual basin. We now have these smartphones, these digital devices by which we communicate instantly with the world. We're part of the world. We're part of the world art community. So therefore, this label, this identity, must be taken out of that conceptual basin and must be reinvented, re-imaged, if you will, re-identified. And now is the very opportune, unique time to, again, reinvent ourselves as the new Chicanos.
We also want to leave some time for some questions and just a little bit interactive. So we have about 10 minutes left. And if you all are okay, we can go to some Q&A.
Sure.
Okay. Whatever the audience wants.
Okay, we have one here and one behind you. Yes, sir.
First and foremost, I'm honored to be in the presence of such eccentric, knowledgeable, humble, people. I'm a byproduct of all that. I'm from Lincoln Heights, East Los.
Okay.
Lincoln Wilson graduate. And the Oxford, the Colonia Chicas, City of Charles, did a lot of movement there in the farm worker movement. And the Teatro Campesino, that's how they advocated and got the hand of the campesinos to knowledge of what was going on with the strike and with the movement with the farm workers. I'm going to share this poem called The Birth of Aslan, and it goes like this. A Chicano baby is born, soon to realize what is before his eyes. He is fed by his mother's breast, only to give him the nourishment for tomorrow's test. Each day he grows old as his life unfolds. Every day of his life he will learn, for he is tomorrow's concern. The creation of life must endure the pain and strife. Always will he be tried, although never to be denied. Then one day he paves the way. Now the challenge is won. His journey just begun, the birth of Aslan. Thank you.
Okay, so we're in an authentic Chicano lecture series because you ask for a question and you get a poem.
Okay, this one right here. Yes, sir. Go ahead, and you're next.
My name is Ronald Rocha, and I'm very proud to be here tonight. I was one of the first employees of KWX-TV, the Today's Univision, that was a joke in the 50s. It was an outright joke in the white community that Mexicans should be broadcasting. And the other thing is that our society did not have the access to reporters and cameras at Lanier High School in 1933 when La Liga Pro Defensa Escolar faced off the Department of Education and almost killed the Secretary of State demanding education reform, thus affording non-whites an equal and adequate education. From that time came the birth of the word Chicano. We had the Zaragoza Theater. We had Carlos Cadena and others that performed. Lalito Astor at the Nacional. Was so much that happened. The word Chicano to us is a rite of passage. We do not know who in the hell we are. Okay? We have faced off the Department of Education. We have faced off the Christian right that excludes all contributions of our people from the textbooks that our children are forced to read and swallow in our educational system. Until that changes, we're neither Chicanos, we're not nothing. We are the Native American. We are the raza. We are the people of this country. We're not taking over this country. It's ours, and it's been ours. You know? And it's happening in the seventh generation prophecy that was talked about. You know, when you look into the Chicano art and you see the Mexican flag.
Okay, we're going to need a question here in a minute. So.
Well, so, I say this because I hear y'all speak, and nothing was mentioned about the word Chicano and its use in San Antonio, how it developed, I mean, how it grew, because all the trends came from San Antonio out throughout the United States. Mm-hmm. You know, and there were no cameras in to write, and there were no TV cameras to broadcast through the United States what was happening here, and how the white at Lanier High School learned and firsthand saw the voting power of the Mexican community on the West Side when it brought down the Department of Education. Thank you.
Well, I might ask the audience the question is, I'm from San Antonio, and I see you have a Fox Tech T-shirt. I went to Fox Tech in Buffalo. But let me ask you this. The whole audience, did you, and we're going to go the 50s and then the 60s and the 70s, did you all hear of the term Chicano before 1950? Put your hand up. Did you ever hear the term Chicano pre-1950? So we have how about pre-1960? In San Antonio. Okay. Pre-1970. So it's probably more a 60s term. We have another question, gentleman up here.
More in a comment form is that Chicano really, you touched on it with a word, the Nahuatl, and Mexica, and to us, the way I see it, I'm from the 60s, so I was a teenager during the walkouts, the Chicano walkouts here in San Antonio, and we used to talk about it, and someone said that it's dead and only it exists in art. You're wrong. We're still struggling here, even here in San Antonio, with the issues such as that the missions are now a World Heritage Site, and they're supposed to be the crown jewel of Spanish colonization of our people, and we're supposed to be silent or jubilant about it. Well, we're neither silent nor jubilant about it. Mm-hmm. But what Chicano meant for us, at least in my time, was that we were trying to re-identify with our indigenous roots, and that we come from the seven tribes of the Chichimecas that come from Chicomostoc. Mm-hmm. That is who we are. We're the native people of here. We're Nicantlaca. We're not from anywhere else but here. Yes, we were bastardized by the Spaniards, but we're trying to reclaim our indigenous roots. And so that has been the problem, why even Nixon in the 70s identified us as Hispanics, and why they throw in the Latino, that we're Romans, Judge Albert Pena used to identify himself this way. Whenever he would speak, he says, "Let me tell you who I am by telling you what I'm not." Mm-hmm. And he would say, "I am not Hispanic because I'm not from Spain. I am not Latino because I am not from Rome. I am Chicano because I am from here." Mm-hmm. So that's what I want to say. We're indigenous people from here. We're Nicantlaca. Okay. And we are still fighting. We're still struggling for our identity here. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Now,
hello?
Got, three more people over here.
I got a question.
Yes.
Okay. Right here.
Somebody
right
has
here.
A mic? Okay, somebody got a mic over there. Go ahead.
This is
okay.
What this is what this is what my, the first day of my class is like.
All right.
It's rowdy. It's good.
Yeah, rowdy.
Pop quiz.
I have a legit question. I come from Califas. I spent time in San Antonio. I see the movement on both sides. And my question is to you, how do you want to get past the actual Chicano art of everyone being seen in a raza or as a pachuco or just wearing bandanas or sitting in front of a lowrider? How do you push past that and fight the actual barrier that's there?
Okay. Jackson, you can answer that one.
is your question that the term Chicano is a stereotype of... Is that what you're saying?
Or? Well, in most society, like, view of it, it is. You know, I've actually went to... the viewing of La Misión when we had it at the Guadalupe Center. I've seen blood in, blood out. And in that same breath, I can tell you, what else have we done? What else have pushed the barrier really politically or, you know, throughout the United States to actually see that we're not just someone from the raza that's getting a special award?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think... I think indeed. Yeah.
All right. Okay.
I think you know this is okay. We have it. I don't know why I'm talking about my class so much, but
this is your class tonight.
a lot of the students, they get very frustrated because the discussion is, you know, either, you know, the term Chicano or what it meant to be Chicano was, it's just misconstrued quite often. It's misunderstood. I think that's some of your frustration, you know, is that people say it means this or people, you know, when in fact it has like deeper meaning. It has, and there is a lot. There's, you know, what the Chicano community has done and has been contributing for since Cesar and Dolores and the Filipinos and Delano rose up in Texas and all that started, you know, there's been lots of movement. Now, the problem has been that, you know, in Texas, well, you can't have like Cesar Chavez in the K-12 curriculum. In Arizona, they're banning ethnic studies. And there's lots of resistance to... you know, to just Chicano studies existing. Not just that, but then as it is, Chicano scholars are attempting to persevere through a structure that was actively working to you know, to stop its progress.
Well,
which
we have the co-founder of Cesar Chavez here in San Antonio, Antonio Diaz.
Good. And so I think, you know, it's why I think it's, you know, it's, we should be doing more, you know.
We should know the truth.
Yeah.
I coined something to your observation. I went from a rural Chicano to an urban Chicano to a Catholic Chicano. And this level of consciousness that we've been, because I've come from a farm working family, growing up in East LA, living here now, I've been all over the country and Canada and all of it. And I know how people try to find me. If I'm on the East Coast, they think I'm, Mohican or Mohawk or a Seneca because of my height, but they fail to realize the Azteca in me, you know, the tallness. And I ran into that at the JJ Academy. Those kids, they need that curriculum. They mm-hmm. need it in the elementary, the middle, and the high school.
You just
if you don't get it,
yeah,
you get it.
Well, good. I'm,
yeah.
Look like we're stirring up.
I have a quick question.
We're stirring up some passion here. Okay, let's.
All right, I have a.
All right,
All right, let's remember Benito Juarez. Respecto. Respecto. All right, and because there are some people here who
got you.
Who have really worked to.
Yeah, get, I think
we have one question right here and then over there. Okay, somebody got the mic.
I'm sorry.
Over there.
Yeah, I'll go. Sort of following what she was saying, and I think that Dr. Vargas sort of touched on it in a very exploitative, oppressive, and nasty capitalist system, and you have art making, and you have the selling of art, and then you have the selling of art within a genre, Chicano art. Are there unique problems that Chicano art faces in this vicious capitalist commodity-driven system? And how do we deal with those problems? Because there's something that's happening. Cultural commodification is happening. And it's widespread, and it's rampant, and it's becoming a really big problem, especially in this new sort of a digital age that we live in. So how do we deal with that?
Okay, George, you want to...
Well, as I mentioned before, we need to reinvent ourselves. Literally, the community itself has to look within itself and restructure itself. We have to have new ideas and new leadership. That means we have to reach from the elder down to the young. Yes, indeed, art is big business. Art is political. Right after about the 1950s, as the Mexican mural renaissance was peaking, the Rockefellers, the Fords, and so forth, the DuPonts, and so forth, decided that they were going to squash mural art, a people's expression in Mexico, Latin America, and also in the United States at that time as it was creeping into the U.S. What did they do? Well, they put into place a huge market for abstract expressionism. The Jackson Pollocks and the Kleins and so forth were being touted over any other expression, especially people's art, so that it was virtually impossible for Latino, Latin American artists, if you will, to travel to the capitals of the art world to produce Mexican or Latin American art or Chicano art unless you produce abstract expressionist art. As you know, that's abstract art with no visual clues whatsoever, and that was the art that was preferred during the Cold War. That was busted up by the pop art scene, which Americans really understood because it's figurative art. Art is such a meaningful vehicle of communication that it begs to be used. You can make art, you can express yourself by this particular expression. You can express your feelings, your angst, your frustration, all of those things that are not given to you in the political arena. More often than not, art authorities are really looking at artists more so than they are at politicians. We have to see what art means, not whether it's good or bad, so that we ourselves have to curate our own shows, collect our own art, manage our own museums, become our own scholars. It's time, America, wake up.
I want to say, on top of what George just said, I have this introduction for the catalog for the show, and the point of the introduction is that if you read Ricardo and Harriet's personal narrative, it's an example of what we should still be doing today, because Ricardo and Harriet didn't make a lot of money and then go out and start buying Chicano art. They're like educators in East LA, you know, and they saw the movement happening around them. So they saw value in what the Chicano artists were doing. And because they valued the Chicano artists as an extension of themselves, as Malakia says in his seminal article, they thought we should use our resources to support that movement and then make that work part of ourselves, because we see it as an extension of ourselves. They're representing our images. They're representing our struggle. They're speaking about things that our lives are dedicated to. And then... So to me, then you have this amassing of a collection, which is quite special, you know. But, you know, it, to me, it's just a matter of what if every Chicano educator, high school teacher, bought a poster every now and then? You know, what if every Chicana, Chicano person who had like a union job or, you know, who had a little bit of disposable income, not disposable, I mean, like, I'm $25, $100, you know, to buy a poster every now and then, we would have a mountain of support, like, overwhelming times, many times over what's currently out there right now in terms of supporting the arts. Because, you know, Anheuser-Busch and Coca-Cola and these major corporations pouring hundreds of millions of dollars into advertising campaigns at our community because they know the amount of like wealth and resources that our community has. And if we were using our own resources to support those people who are doing the work that's actively encouraging our development and our, you know, path towards greater equality, you know, you could have a really, really very vibrant artistic movement with people speaking about things that really are critical of the world in which we live and promoting a vision of a future that is you know more equal and just. If well, that's well, it is exactly. It is, and that be, and what my point is that they're that you know they're these corporations are aware of the mountain of wealth that our community generates, and if some of that if we were aware of our power, we would be able to use that wealth and those resources to support a movement like this one.
Okay. I think.
Sorry. Yeah.
Well, not him. He's got his students to worry. But you're right. Okay, let's have a question back there.
One of the important things that I realized what is to be Chicano and not be afraid and be open about everything that you learn in your life. I'm a 65-year-old veteran. I was born in the Rio Grande Valley. I found myself in South Vietnam at the age of 18. I made San Antonio my home. And I wanted to go to law school so I can help La Raza and improve and fight against discrimination and all that. So when I applied, I got the same response. I didn't score high enough in the LSAT test, and they would only allow me under probation status, which is the exact way I got a degree from Our Lady of the Lake University. But here is the point I'm trying to make. After they helped me, and I began to see things that were happening that were not correct, I filed suit against OLLU. That's no longer a popular person to have around. So I ask Dr. Romo and you people who have gone around the country and seen great movements like Chicano art, Chicana art, all of that is beautiful. All of that is part of being Chicano. What I'm concerned about is so little an effort is being made to curar our people, the susto, and not be afraid to take a position and change things. You know why I'm glad I didn't go to law school? Because as a steward for a local union, I won more cases against discrimination against Kelly Air Force Base than the attorneys that were defending them. And I told my wife, you know, I'm glad I didn't go to law school.
Yeah.
I'd be embarrassed to be beat by a steward.
Cesar Chavez would have said, si se puede, si se puede.
I would like to know what type of effort is being made at the university level. Are there scholars together to talk about these issues? We need to change and open the gates to education different than what we've had in the past, yeah. So that we're not asking ourselves, what do we do as Chicanos, or are we Chicanos? Or we're a people already with an identity. What we need to do is act as those people to accomplish some of the the greats that we can enjoy in this life?
That's a good question, and I think it's been addressed a little bit here by what Carlos was saying, that there is a movement right now, say in Arizona, to ban not only books by, you know, by the Sandra Cisneros. By the way, Henry, you cannot mention Henry Cisneros in the textbooks right now in Texas. You know, there's this movement, so we have to fight back. By the way, one of the things I believe is the greatest thing we can do for students is like the number one thing the students want out of college is critical thinking. That if you give them critical thinking, they'll figure a lot of these things out for themselves. You don't have to give them all the answers. By the way, we're out of time, so I want to thank all of you for... I wanna thank George and Senor Jackson. Thank you all for being with us. And